Everybody, this is Jose Palomino, CEO of Value Prop Interactive, and you're a host for Business Growth on Purpose. And our guest today is Justin Kutu of R&D Technologies, based in Rhode Island. And Justin has been our guest before, and we wanted him back because we think things are changing, and you know things are changing. So I wanted to get a sense from somebody who's right at the front lines of some pretty cutting-edge manufacturing markets, to give us some insight to what's really going on, what's possible, and a little bit about the transition, transformations, and advancements that he's making with his firm. So we're going to get the CEO point of view here in just a moment as Justin joins our show. Well, welcome, Justin, to Business Growth on Purpose.
Thank you, Jose. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of the things we've been doing lately is we're going back through our guest list of folks that we think added a lot of value in their prior episode. So we'll link a prior episode when we first met on the show, I guess like 6 months ago or so. And I know, life goes on, things change, and things have been changing fast in the overall marketplace. So maybe just to calibrate things for our listeners, just kind of like what's been happening in the, since I guess this was probably the latter half of 21 when we spoke. So here we are in middle of 22, just after July 4th.
Time goes fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what are some things you see changing either for your business or just generally out there in the market that you like are noticing, like, okay, that's different. That's becoming something new.
Sure. So when we last spoke, I think I mentioned some technologies that were coming out. The Stratasys was launching. We were in negotiation with Stratasys bringing in a new technology called DLP or P3 technology. It's a lot like an SLA system, which really beautiful, like really aesthetically nice looking parts and strength, open source too, which is really nice, which means we can kind of go out and get sort of aftermarket materials for this machine. So this machine is called the Origin One. We're bringing it into our shop, which is going to integrate well with our technology and our customers and what they've been looking for. We've kind of listened to the demands of what our customers have asked for in the past. And we have a great partnership with other customers with other partners of ours that are out there that have different technologies that we don't have internally under our umbrella. So we've been usually outsourcing those jobs to these different partners. But we were looking, for another way to kind of add to our customer base. Bringing this technology in is going to be one way of doing it. They added three technologies. I think I might've mentioned in our last interview. And we brought in one of them. We're looking to potentially bring in another powder jet fusion technology that they offered, which is an H350 machine, which competes with Hewlett-Packard's machines that are up there. But it's a gradual pace. Especially with some of the problems that have come up over the last 6 months since we last spoke with the supply chain being so difficult.
Sure.
So that's where we run into some issues with getting materials, costs of goods going up, outsourcing becomes very expensive. So we've been, doing some planning, to say the least, to try to make sure that we satisfy our customers' needs, their expectations, their timeframes, their, time to markets. So those are some of the questions that we may not have went in depth with our customers in the past, basically on project deadlines. So with this technology, it's been interesting. Unfortunately, it's taken quite some time to bring the machine in-house, but we're getting there. So that's been a good add to to our service bureau.
So what's interesting about that, and I think this would be true anyone in manufacturing, but I think it's good for anyone in business to hear this, is the level or depth of conversations you have to have with customers now, speaking to things like all the way earlier in the supply chain than maybe you had to in the past. In the past, it might've been assumed you get materials and here's what I want. Can you make it or not? Now sure. It's like, it's a broader conversation now that you have to have with people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So we deal with customers that sometimes we have no idea what they're building. We have NDAs in place with them and they send us parts and the conversation was basically limited to, okay, what kind of stresses is it taking? What materials are we looking at to make sure that you're going to get it aesthetically the way you want it? Is it a form fit functionality piece? What kind of ergonomic testing are you doing? Now it's how quickly do you need it? What's your competition doing out there? How are you beating them to market? Those kind of questions come up, but it's more along the lines that also gear into what problems are they having getting materials in? How stalled is a project become because of goods and services are being delayed? And that's happening everywhere in supply chain. Just look at a local market and it goes up from there. So we've been asking questions that go in depth of what is your design and manufacturing processes? What is your design cycle? What is your manufacturing cycle? And you know, where are we falling in between that? So we have to make sure that we're meeting their expectations. Now, we deal with customers that we have those in-depth conversations, but we also deal with kind of clearinghouse type companies that will send us parts just to do. We know very little about who that part is going to. So that's kind of up to them that we have to make sure that we kind of, you know, get that gap lowered.
Right. Well, that's interesting because in that, you know, that model, let's say the clearinghouse model, made a lot more sense 2 years ago. Now, to not be more transparent with you is really could be a critical problem, because in fact, there's questions you would know to ask that they might not think about it because they're just taking, you know, let's say they took the drawing or the SolidWorks design or whatever, and they're working with it.
Right.
You know, and so it's interesting. For example, within material shortage, you can make a part that based on old paradigms that use X amount of material. But now if materials are actually twice as expensive, thinking of that part and maintaining the attributes of strength, flexibility, whatever it is that part has to be able to do functionally, but to do so with less material being consumed is almost a whole redesign stage as well. So there's a lot of thinking that has to take place everywhere along the way. And I'm just curious, Justin, have you ever been in a situation where you know you're making a good suggestion, like, dude, you really should look at this. This could be done differently. And the person you're talking to isn't really smelling what you're cooking, even though what you're cooking is good for them.
Right. All the time. Unfortunately, Jose, there is a kind of a primitive mindset that are out there for older manufacturers that are used to dealing with traditional manufacturing. How we are getting them to get over that hurdle is we are explaining to them your time and cost in goods is going up. So they're outsourcing, let's just say, to China. If you think it's delayed in the US, it's even, you know, twice as bad, you know, outsourcing overseas and not knowing exactly the people that you're working with. They've had a good relationship. I'm not saying it's been done all over the place, but they're seeing that just bringing this kind of additive manufacturing into their fold, into their processes, has a humongous amount of value in the fact that now it's digital inventory. They don't have to worry about space in the manufacturing floor with jigs, fixtures, tooling, things like that, and that it's readily available to them at a third of the cost, a lot of times, or even much less than that, depends on what they're building. So parts that they were getting, and they were, you know, the strengths, and they understood the different aluminums and metals that were out there that they were using for their processes. And they didn't realize that there was a parallels you can draw between our high-end thermoplastics that we use in additive manufacturing versus what they're using currently. And the amount of waste and the amount of just, again, the space on the manufacturing floors where you're inventorying these parts versus you can throw these parts out when you're done with them and then just reprint them whenever you like them. So there's a big difference there. But that's how we're bringing more people to having people have a better understanding of what we do. And we're not trying to take over for traditional manufacturing. We're trying to branch off of it and give people other options. So that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And you know, we talked in our last interview where I had been exposed working with the MEP centers they had declared the year of additive. And this is like 10 years ago or something like that.
Yeah. I remember.
Yeah. And everybody's going crazy. Additive is going to change everything. We're going to be printing cards.
The crack's been a gradual slide. Yeah. Gradual.
So it's interesting.
Climb, yeah.
So in the midst of that, you know, you made some big strategic changes with your business. And the reality was that shift to additive wasn't going to happen as fast as some of the proponents were putting out it was going to happen. But yet you saw it was happening, but maybe in slightly different ways. Not it's not going to be like, again, we're not going to be printing planes anytime soon, but we are going to be printing parts that may go in a plane.
Absolutely. Sure. And we're doing it consistently. And both critical and non-flight critical parts are being built on our machines daily. I mean, there's metal machines out there that have been a humongous part of the aerospace and aircraft and all kinds of government contractors have been working with these kind of technologies. We've looked into metal. We're trying to determine what makes sense for us in that industry. It's a big investment.
Yeah.
It's not like you just bring one in and just say, okay, let's start building parts. It's the hiring of finding the right person for it and making sure it's a full-time job. You come in and you wear that hat, you know, and they are very skilled people that are working on those machines, but they build parts that are that you just can't machine. They're not building trinkets and dragons and things like that. They're building, you know, real production quality aerospace parts that are going into attack helicopters and jets and you name it, that are taking over for traditional manufacturing of building on CNCs and things of that nature that may be time consuming, may have more cost in metal and also taking away from a lot of weight. So adding to the fuel costs of those jets that are running rocket fuel through that are, you know, it's a big step in the right direction, where our defense industry is, you know, benefiting quite a bit from additive manufacturing. So,
well, and that requires kind of a long haul view of the future, right? Like you can't just be looking at what's happening right now. Yet, in the mid market in the owner led category, right? You know, right now matters a lot. Like it's right now is payroll. It's making sure your bank is on the right. The ratios are all on the right side of what the bank wants to see.
Of course, yeah.
Right. So how do you, as an owner, as a leader, how have you, Justin, balanced the needs of because you clearly have vision for your business. You've taken some bold moves to take your business forward. And yet you had payroll to make on Friday.
Yeah.
Right. So and I know
every few weeks.
Yeah. And a lot of owners can't make that transition. So they end up not thinking bigger dreams, so to speak, because they just have to focus on the here and now. And I understand that. But somehow you were able to. Or in the midst of navigating that. So I'm just curious how you, you know, kind of the inner game of you as an owner, as a leader, as a CEO, how have you balanced building for the future yet taking care of the present?
It's a lot of it's budget planning. So you start with a budget at the beginning of every year, or the end of your fiscal year. And we do budget planning meetings almost monthly. We have management meetings weekly on Mondays. And we know what we're spending, and we know when weeks are good, weeks are bad. You surround yourself with good people. My controller is excellent. She's done a fantastic job with us. And you have to keep an eye on what's coming in and what's going out. So it's a constant, you know, this is, any accountant is going to be able to, will slap me if they hear this interview, but obviously it's a constant monitoring of your P&L. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that matters the most is your balance sheet. That's a biggie. And so when we are doing our budget meetings, we know what we need to purchase, what we can stockpile for materials. And it's a game of measurements. It's okay, we have enough, you know, do we foresee basically forecasting what we've done years past, because it's been difficult with the pandemic. We don't really know. It's tough to judge what happened in 21, 20, based on traditional numbers of what we do for, you know, for additive manufacturing. So what we've had to do is build numbers from 17, 18, 19 and determine where our variables are month to month. So we try to determine what needs to be purchased, but our company runs a little bit differently as well, is that we bring in materials on Stratasys and we know what the cost is of each machine that's running. So there's a dollar amount every time you turn that machine on based on just not material mm-hmm. consumptions, but runtime. So, and there's cleaning, you know, methods that have to be brought into the fold as well. So we keep a close eye on occupancy of the machine. So how much they're running, what jobs are in the queue afterwards. And our vice president, Jordan Novak's done a fantastic job. He runs the GMN round the clock. He's here on weekends and he's always looking, bringing in new jobs. And he's been sort of the face of, if you will, dealing with some of the larger customers. So he's been public relations, to say the least. But yeah, you surround yourself with people that understand the finances that go behind running these machines and the operations of getting parts out the door efficiently with less human error, really. I mean, we can't predict when a machine's going to go down and for whatever reasons, but we can do everything we can to make sure that the machines are maintained, that we're constantly monitoring when they've been calibrated and prevent any kind of downtime. Because when a machine goes down during a 40-hour build, it can really set you back. And we have to set our customers' expectations around the fact that we have availability on the machines and they're ready to go. So that's one way we really do our best, trying to kind of count the pennies that we're spending. And then it goes even deeper if you want to get into packaging and, you know, marketing and all these other different things, but that's all parts of budget meetings. And month to month, we have something called an action plan meeting. So that's when we bring everybody in on all different parts of the company, and they get to talk about a little bit about what's going on in their division. And that's where they're able to kind of voice, here's where we see problems. Let's talk about what we can do to get better with it. Whose help do you need? And then what are the outreaches? What do you need? So put something together for me. Give me a proposal, what you need, how much it's going to cost. And we determine from there if it's going to help the company generate more revenue or if it's going to be something that's going to take a little bit longer and maybe a setback for now. So we make sure we go through those action items. So those are good meetings to have. And of course, your management meetings every week. And either they're great meetings and you say, hey, great, or they're, oh God, sharpen the pencil meetings. So it depends.
Wow. Well, you know, what's interesting about that too is it really does sound like you lean on your people to surface ideas, possibilities. Like you said, if they see a potential for something, maybe they start a trade show and they say that would work well with us. They can make their case to your leader, you and your leadership team as to whether or not it makes sense to make an investment or something like that. So that just sounds like a creative place where people can, you know, everybody has to watch out and take care, you know, count the nickels, dimes and quarters, because eventually they add up to dollars.
Yes, indeed.
But at the same time, they're not going to get shot down or they have an idea. We should bring in an XYZ machine or we should try this. There's an opportunity for them to speak. And I see a lot of smaller owner-led businesses that all too often don't do that. Mm. And they make it actually, if somebody raises their hand, has a good idea, and they say, not now, Ralph. And, you know, and then that's the last time Ralph comes up with a good idea because Ralph.
Started getting shot down. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, right. Exactly. Right. Wow. Well, so, one thing that I am curious about because of how things are changing in overall the whole world right now, something that was very big in the world of manufacturing of all kinds and different subcategories like packaging, manufacturing and so on.
Yeah.
Is trade shows. And there was a big question, even pre-pandemic, are trade shows dead? Are they going to go away? Are they going to go fully virtual? And so they went fully virtual but nobody got too excited about it. And I don't read much about that. The virtual shows were an effective enough replacement, even when the whole world had to go there.
Right.
What do you see happening in terms of like marketing? Like, how do you, it's tied to the marketing question. How does a company that's not a global brand get known by those global brands, if not trade shows, or is that coming back?
It's $1 million question, Jose. It's a great question. If I had the answer to marketing right now, man, boy, we could do something with that. So to answer your first question, yes, marketing is back. Trade shows are back.
Okay.
Thank goodness too, because I enjoy trade shows. I love the face-to-face interaction where, you're not, doing these, virtual, you're in whatever room, you're in this room, it's good to see the people. And it's more importantly, they like to see you. They like to go and say, oh, geez, R&D technology is good. I do a lot of work with you guys. So you do it a lot for your customers. And it's great to meet new people as well. But it's good to be there. It's good to see peers. It's good to even see your competition. I don't mind that. It's good to see what they're doing. And, your booth says a lot about your company. So we try to strategically set up our booth. We make, the proper benchmarks based on what the clientele of the show is going to be. So if it's aerospace, we're not bringing in a bunch of toy parts. Right. We're bringing in what have you that's related to aerospace and so on and so forth. So we do about three, four, five shows a year, depends, a year. And then we do some of our own open house events. In 3 weeks, we're doing something called a customer experience customer experience traveling roadshow, 3D printing traveling roadshow. The Stratasys is coming down. They're bringing a big, sort of looks like a fifth wheel trailer. And it's really cool. It's got a bunch of machines, some of the newer technologies on it, a lot of different parts, really radical parts, benchmarks that they've made in all kinds of different technologies with polyjet matrix, a lot of color and full Pantone color. So the trade show itself, that's our event that we're doing. So we love these things. But the trade shows bring in a different kind of business that you may not know that's out there that you learn from as well, which is a big, it's big that you're able to go and visit the different booths as well. The virtual ones, it's tough to talk with them and get in there and start a chat because a lot of times people aren't even manning it. They're not even, they go in, they assign a couple of people from the company to man a virtual booth. And then half the time they're out, you know, doing their real work. Whereas when you're at these, the regular trade shows, the Design to Parts of the World, the EastTechs, you know, those kind of shows, they're there at the booth and they're there to talk to people. And they have, you know, yeah, they have a job to do, but they're also sharing knowledge. It's a big difference. And getting that understanding of what their different industries are is a huge deal in what we do, because we work with everybody, as I mentioned before, from the toy companies to medical device to aerospace and on from there. Marketing is difficult because we don't know what to throw our money at from month to month. It's we have a plan in place. And we stay with it. And it's everyone's, you know, SEO and SEM. And we put our dollars into the trade shows. We also put a lot into Google. Everyone's putting into Google ads. And, you know, but, you know, we have a consultant that helps us with that. Thank God. Because otherwise, it's you have a lot of people with a lot of ideas, but no real true understanding of how in-depth marketing goes. So that's one of the things. Boy, I wish I learned. I knew a little bit more about it and I had the time to dive into it. But, you know, thank goodness here, there's people, smart people here that know more than me on marketing, and they are kind of helping guide. And I'm a good listener when it comes to that. So.
Wow. So a lot, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned a couple of things right away that I just want to comment on. One is the physical trade show allows for a casual collision of ideas. Where anything virtual, people are going because they research, oh, you have this. So they ask you three questions about something, but you never get to like shoot the breeze about something else that might inspire, or they look at a part that's not like the part they make, but it inspires. Oh, you can do three colors like that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. So that whole casual thing doesn't happen virtually. It's everything on virtual is like by appointment. It's very specific. It's a great vehicle for that, but not for those accidental explosions or inspirations, which can only happen by putting people in the same space and just, you know, create a venue where they interact, you know.
And they're your best opportunities. Those people, you nailed it on the head. Those people become your best opportunities. The people that come and say, you do that? I have an application. I would like to run this by you. And then it stems from there.
So, that's an exciting conversation.
Yeah, that's when you say, "Oh, wait a minute, we can do something with this."
Right. I love the traveling roadshow idea. I think that's. I mean, you obviously need the support of the manufacturer and stuff because it's big. You know, it's some big iron, some big technology, some big capital. But that sounds interesting. I could see a lot of engineering types. Oh yeah, let's check it out because, you know, let's face it, their day might otherwise be pretty routine.
And right.
You break the day, which is.
And we also are inviting. We try to keep it more of a local event because we have, it's called REMA or Rhode Island Manufacturer Associations. Mm-hmm. So we try to have companies from REMA because we're part of that organization, another company called Polaris MEP, and the different chambers that are all within the state of Rhode Island, bring in those different manufacturing companies in Rhode Island, which is nice. And we set up their booths. So people that don't necessarily have a lot to do with additive manufacturing, but guys that do post-processing, guys that are involved in manufacturing on some level. So we'll bring those guys in, they set up booths, they walk through their tour, and then they come into our shop. They get a chance to demo the machines. If they bring in an STL file or a CAD file, they can go and we'll do a run through for them, potentially even do a benchmark for them. And we do a full catered lunch. And something we have up here, which is a delicacy in my neck of the woods, is called Dell's Lemonade. It's just a frozen lemonade, but everyone loves it in Rhode Island. It's like coffee milk or clam cakes, you know?
Okay. There you go. No, I love it. I love it. I love the whole idea.
It's a fun event. And it's, again, as we mentioned before, it's one of the greatest things is having the face-to-face interactions that we've lost for a great deal of time.
Yeah. Wow. So it's interesting, you know, even though the stuff you do is very cutting edge, it still would benefit from that human touch. So that's, you know,
100%,
I'm hearing that everywhere. Well, Justin, this has been great catching up with you. Thank you so much for stopping by Business Growth on Purpose. Just for our listeners, if somebody wanted to know more about you, your services and so on, where should they go to get more information?
I'm just going to give my link because everything's underneath it. So it's www.rnd-tech.com. And they can click on the LinkedIn under there and also our Twitter account. And also, you know, that's where they can kind of dive in and see what's going on with the different social medias that we're up to, different events that we're doing as well on events and planning. But
okay,
appreciate it, Jose. This has been great. Thank you.
No, absolutely. Our pleasure. It was good hanging out with you today.
Thanks so much, Jose.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose. If you like the show, hit subscribe and leave us a review to help other people find the podcast. And if you're ready to take the next step in driving intentional growth for your business, come check out what we're doing at valueprop.com. We've developed industry-leading programs and systems to help B2B owners take control of their growth. Until then, thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose.